You. I appreciate that. Just don't let anyone else in to use your restroom, okay?
I grin at him flirtatiously, proud that I even have it in me. We haven't even been on a date yet, and you're already trying to dictate who can and can't use my restroom? He shoots me the same grin in return.
I can't help it if I'm a little possessive. It was a really nice restroom.
I roll my eyes and begin to close the door. Good night, Owen.
I'm serious.
He says.
You even have those cute little seashell soaps. I love those.
We're both laughing now as he watches me through the crack in the door. Right when the door shuts and I lock the latch, he knocks again. I shake my head and open the door, but it catches with the chain lock this time. What now?
It's midnight,
he says frantically, slapping at the door.
call her. Call your roommate.
Oh shit, I mutter. I retrieve my phone and begin to dial Emery's number. I was about to dial 911, Emery says as she answers. Sorry, we almost forgot. Do you need to use the code word? She asks. No, I'm fine. I already locked him out, so I don't think he's going to murder me tonight. Emery sighs. That sucks, she says. Not that he didn't murder you, she adds quickly. I just really wanted to hear you say the code word. I laugh. I'm sorry my safety disappoints you. She sighs again. Please, just say it for me one time. Fine, I say with a groan. Meat dress. Are you happy? There's a quiet pause before she says, I don't know. Now I'm not sure if you said the code word just to make me happy or if you're really in danger. I laugh. I'm fine. I'll see you when you get home. I hang up the phone and glance at Owen through the opening in the door. His eyebrow is cocked and his head is tilted.
Your code word was meat dress? That's kind of morbid, isn't it?
I smile because it kind of is. So is choosing an apartment based on its connection to a horror film. I told you Emery is different. He nods in agreement. I had fun tonight, I tell him. He smiles.
I had funner.
We're both smiling, almost cheesily, until I straighten up and decide to close the door for good this time. Good night, Owen.
Good night, Auburn.
He says.
Thank you for not correcting my grammar.
Thank you for not killing me, I say in response. His smile disappears.
Yet.
I don't know if I should laugh at that comment,
I'm kidding.
he says, as soon as he sees the hesitation on my face.
My jokes always fail when I'm trying to impress a girl.
Don't worry, I say to reassure him. I was kind of impressed as soon as I walked into your studio tonight. He smiles appreciatively and slips his hand through the opening in the door before I can shut it again.
Wait.
He says, wiggling his fingers.
Give me your hand.
Why? So you can lecture me about how I shouldn't touch strangers' hands through locked doors? He dismisses my question with a shake of his head.
We're far from being strangers, Auburn. Give me your hand.
I tentatively bring my fingers up and barely touch them to his. I'm not sure what he's doing. His eyes drop to our fingers, and he leans his head against the door frame. I do the same, and we both watch our hands as he slides his fingers between mine. We're on two separate sides of a locked door, so I have no idea how simply touching his hand can make me have to lean against the wall for support, but that's exactly what I'm doing. Chills run up my arms, and I close my eyes. His fingers brush delicately over my palm and trace their way around my hand. My breaths are shaky, and my hand is growing even shakier. I have to stop myself from unlocking the door so I can pull him inside and beg him to do to the rest of me what he's doing to my hand.
You feel that?
He whispers. I nod because I know he's looking right at me. I can feel his stare. He doesn't speak again, and his hand eventually stills against mine, so I slowly open my eyes. He's still watching me through the crack in the door, but as soon as my eyes are all the way open, he quickly lifts his head away from the door frame and pulls his hand back, leaving mine empty.
Fuck.
He says, standing up straight. He runs his hand through his hair and then grips the back of his neck.
I'm sorry. I'm ridiculous.
He releases his neck and grips the doorknob.
I'm leaving for real this time, before I scare you away.
He says with a smile. I grin. Good night, OMG. He slowly shakes his head back and forth while his eyes narrow playfully.
You're lucky I like you, Auburn Mason Reed.
With that, he closes the door. Oh my God, I whisper. I think I might have a crush on that boy. Auburn. I groan, not ready to wake up, but someone's hand is on my shoulder, shaking me. Rude. Auburn, wake up. It's Emery's voice. The police are here. I immediately roll onto my side and see her standing over me. She's got mascara under her eyes, and her blonde hair is sticking out in all directions. Her unexpected, unkempt appearance scares me more than the fact that she just said the police are here. I sit up straight in bed. I try to find my alarm clock to check the time, but my eyes won't open enough for me to see it. What time is it? After 9, she says. And did you hear me? I said there's a cop here. He's asking for you. I scoot myself off the bed and look for my jeans. I find them crumpled on the floor on the other side of my bed. As soon as I get them buttoned, I reach into the closet for a shirt. Are you in some kind of trouble? Emery asks, standing by my door now. Shit, I forgot she doesn't know anything about me. It's not the police, I tell her. It's just Trey, my brother-in-law. I can see she's still confused, and that makes sense since he's not really my brother-in-law. It's just easier to refer to him that way sometimes. I also have no idea why he's here. I open my bedroom door and see Trey standing in the kitchen, making himself a cup of coffee. Is everything okay? I ask him. He spins around, and as soon as I see his smile, I know everything is fine. He's just here for a visit.
All good,
he says.
Shift just ended and I was in the neighborhood. Thought I'd bring you breakfast.
He holds up a sack and tosses it toward me on the counter. Emery walks around me and grabs the bag, opening it. Is it true? She asks, looking up at Trey. Do cops really get all the free donuts they want? She grabs one of the pastries and shoves it in her mouth while making her way toward the living room. Trey is looking at her with contempt, but she doesn't notice. I wonder if she's aware that she hasn't looked in a mirror today. I doubt she cares. I love that about her. Thank you for the breakfast, I tell him. I take a seat at the bar, confused as to why he would think it's okay to just stop by without notice, especially this early in the morning. But I don't say anything because I'm sure it's just me being cranky due to my late night and lack of sleep. Is Lydia coming home today? He shakes his head.
Tomorrow morning.
He sets his cup on the bar.
Where were you last night?
I cock my head, wondering why he would even ask that. What do you mean? He glances back at me.
She says you called over an hour late.
Now I get why he's here. I sigh. Did you really want to bring me breakfast, or are you using it as an excuse to check up on me? The offended look he shoots me makes me regret my comment. I blow out an exasperated breath and rest my arms on the bar. I was working, I say. I filled in at an art gallery for extra money. Trey is standing in the exact spot Owen was standing in last night. Trey and Owen are probably the same height, but for some reason, Trey just appears more intimidating. I don't know if it's because he's always in a police uniform or if it's the hardened facial features. His dark eyes always seem to be frowning, whereas Owen can't seem to help smiling. Just thinking about Owen and the fact that I'll see him again tonight instantly puts me in a better mood.
An art gallery? Which one?
The one on Pearl, near my work. It's called Confess. Trey's jaw tenses and he sets his cup of coffee on the counter.
I know the one,
he says.
Callahan Gentry's son owns that building.
Am I supposed to know who Callahan Gentry is? He shakes his head and pours his coffee in the sink.
Cal's an attorney,
he says.
And his son is trouble.
I wince at his insult because I don't understand it. Owen is the last person I would associate with the word trouble. Trey grabs his keys off the bar and begins making his way out of the kitchen.
I don't like the idea of you working for him.
Not that Trey's opinion matters to me in any way, but I'm a little put off that he even made that comment. You don't have to worry about it, I say. I was fired last night. Not what he was looking for in an employee, I guess. I failed to tell him the true reason I was fired last night. I'm sure that would upset him even more.
Good,
he says.
You coming to dinner Sunday night?
I follow him to the door. Haven't missed it yet, have I? Trey turns to face me after he opens the door.
Well, you've also never missed a phone call, and look what happened last night.
Touché, Trey. I hate confrontation, and my attitude is going to start one if I don't backtrack. The last thing I need is tension with Trey or Lydia. Sorry, I mutter. It was a late night last night with working two jobs yesterday. Thank you for the breakfast. I'll be nicer the next time you show up unannounced. He smiles and reaches up to tuck a lock of hair behind my ear. It's an intimate gesture, and I don't like that he feels comfortable enough to do it.
It's fine, Auburn.
He drops his hand and steps out into the hall.
See you Sunday night.
I close the door and lean against it. I've been getting a very different vibe from him lately. When I lived in Portland, I never saw him. However, moving to Texas put me in his presence a lot more, and I'm not sure we're on the same page when it comes to how we define our friendship. I don't like him, Emery says. I glance toward the living room and she's seated on the couch, eating her donut while flipping through a magazine. You don't even know him, I say in Trey's defense. I like the guy you had over last night much better. She doesn't bother looking up from her magazine as she judges me. You were here last night? She nods and takes a long sip of her soda, again not bothering to give me eye contact. Yep. What? Why does she think this is okay? Were you here when I called you about the code word? She nods again. I was in my room. I'm really good at eavesdropping, she says flatly. I nod once and make my way back toward my bedroom. That's good to know, Emery.
Chapter 6. Owen. If I were smarter, I would be at my place right now, getting dressed. If I were smarter, I'd be mentally preparing to show up at Auburn's apartment, since that's what I promised her I would do tonight. If I were smarter, I wouldn't be sitting here, waiting for my father to walk through the door and see my hands cuffed behind my back. I don't really know how I should feel right now, but numbness probably isn't the appropriate response. I just know he's about to walk through that door any second, and the last thing I want to do is look him in the eyes. The door opens. I look away. I hear his footsteps as he slowly enters the room. I shift in my seat, but I can barely move thanks to the metal digging into my wrists. I bite my bottom lip to stop myself from saying something I'll regret. I bite it so hard I taste blood. I continue to avoid looking at him and choose to focus on the poster hanging on the wall. It's a photo timeline depicting the progression of meth use over a 10-year span. I stare at it, aware of the fact that all 10 pictures are of the same man, and all of them are mugshots. That means the guy was arrested no fewer than 10 times. He's got 9 arrests on me. My father sighs from where he's seated, directly across from me. He sighs so heavily, his breath reaches me from across the table. I scoot back a few inches. I don't even want to know what's going through his head right now. I just know what's going through my head, and that's nothing but a sea of disappointment. Not as much for my arrest as for the fact that I've let Auburn down. She seems to live a life where a lot of people let her down, and I hate that I'm about to become one of them. I hate it. Owen, my father says, requesting my attention. I don't give it to him. I wait for him to finish, but he doesn't say anything beyond my name. I don't like that all he said was my name, because I know there are a hell of a lot of other things he wants to say to me right now. There are certainly a lot of things I want to say to him, but Callahan Gentry and his son are not the best communicators. Not since the night Owen Gentry became Callahan Gentry's only son. That's probably the only day out of my entire life I wouldn't trade this one for. That day is the reason why I continue to do the shit I do. That day is the reason I'm sitting here, about to have to talk to my father about my options. Sometimes I wonder if Carrie can still see us. I wonder what he would think of what's become of us. I look away from the meth poster and stare at my father. We've perfected the art of silence over the past few years. Do you think Carrie can see us right now? My father's face remains expressionless. The only thing I see in his eyes is disappointment. And I don't know if it's disappointment because he failed at being a father, or if it's disappointment that I'm in this situation, or if it's disappointment that I just brought up Carrie. I never bring up my brother. My father never brings up my brother. I don't know why I'm doing it now. I lean forward and I keep my eyes locked with his. What do you think he thinks of me, Dad? I say quietly. So quietly. If my voice were a color, it would be white. My father's jaw clenches, so I keep going. Do you think he's disappointed in my inability to just say no? My father inhales and looks away, breaking eye contact with me. I'm making him uncomfortable. I can't lean forward any more than I already am, so I scoot my chair toward him until my chest meets the table between us. I'm as close as I can get now. What do you think Carrie thinks of you, Dad? That sentence would be painted black. My father's fist meets the table, and his chair falls backward when he stands abruptly. He paces the room twice and kicks the chair, causing it to crash against the wall. He continues to pace from one end of the small room to the other, which is only about 7 feet or so. He's so pissed, I feel bad that we're in such a tiny room. The man needs space to release all of his aggression. They should take these types of situations into consideration when they arrest people and stick them in tiny square rooms to meet with their lawyers. Because you never know when a lawyer is also a father, and that father needs space to fit all his anger. He takes several deep breaths, in and out, just like he used to teach Carrie and me to do when we were younger. Being brothers, we used to fight a lot. No more so than other brothers, but back then, when Callahan Gentry was a father, he would do everything he could to teach us how to deal with our anger internally, rather than physically. Only you can control your reactions, he would say to us. No one else. You control your anger, and you control your happiness. Get it under control, boys. I wonder if I should repeat those words to him right now. Get it under control, Dad. Probably not. He doesn't want me to interrupt him as he silently attempts to convince himself that I didn't mean what I said. He tries to tell himself that I only said it because I'm under a lot of stress. Callahan Gentry is good at lying to himself. If I had to paint him right now, I would paint him every shade of blue I could find. He calmly places his palms flat on the table between us. He stares down at his hands and fails to make eye contact with me. He inhales one long, slow breath and then releases it even slower. I'm posting your bail as soon as I can. I want him to think I'm indifferent. I'm not indifferent, though. I don't want to be here, but there's nothing I can do about it. Not like I have anywhere else to be, I say to him. I mean, I don't, do I? I'd already be late if I were to even show up, plus there's no way I could show up now and tell Auburn where I've been, or why. Besides, I was more or less warned to stay away from her last night, so there's also that. So yeah, who needs bail? Not me. Not like I have anywhere else to be, I repeat. My father's eyes meet mine, and it's the first time I notice the tears. With those tears comes hope. Hope that he's reached his breaking point. Hope that this was the last straw. Hope that he'll finally say, "How can I help you, Owen? How can I make this better for you?" None of those things happen, though, and my hope disappears right along with the tears in his eyes. He turns and walks to the door. We'll talk tonight, at the house. And he's gone.
What in the hell happened to you? Harrison asks. You look like shit.
I take a seat at the bar. I haven't slept in over 24 hours. As soon as my bail cleared a few hours ago, I went straight to my studio. I didn't even bother going to my father's house to discuss this situation, because I need a little more time before I can face him. It's almost midnight now, so I know Auburn is probably asleep or too pissed off to sleep, because I never showed up tonight like I promised I would. It's probably for the best, though. I need to get my life straightened out enough for her to want to be a part of it. I was arrested last night. Harrison immediately stops pouring the glass of beer he was about to hand me. He squares up and faces me full on.
I'm sorry. Did you just say arrested?
I nod and reach across the bar, taking the half-full beer from him.
I hope you're about to elaborate,
he says, watching me take a long drink. I set the glass down on the bar and wipe my mouth. Arrested for possession. Harrison's expression becomes a mixture of anger and nervousness.
Wait a second, he says.
He leans in and lowers his voice to a whisper.
You didn't tell them I...
I'm offended he would even ask that, so I cut him off before he even finishes the question. Of course not, I say. I refuse to say anything about where the pills came from. Unfortunately, that won't help my situation when I show up for court.
Apparently they cut you slack when you rat people out.
I laugh and shake my head. That's fucked up, huh? We teach kids that tattling is wrong, but as adults, we're rewarded for it. Harrison doesn't respond. I can see all the words he wants to say. He's just doing his best to keep them in. Harrison, I say, leaning forward. It's fine. It'll be fine. It's my first offense, so I doubt I'll get much. He shakes his head.
It's not fine, Owen. I've been telling you to stop this shit for over a year now. I knew it would catch up with you, and I hate being the one to say I told you so, but I fucking told you so about a million goddamn times.
I exhale. I'm too tired to listen to this right now. I stand up and set a $10 bill on the bar, and I turn around and leave. He's right, though. He told me so. And he's not the only one, because I've been telling myself this would catch up to me for a hell of a lot longer than Harrison has.
Chapter 7. Auburn. Do you want a refill? I smile and say, sure, to the waitress, even though I know I don't need a refill. I should just leave, but there's still a small part of me that hopes Lydia will show up. Surely she didn't forget. I debate whether or not to text her again. She's over an hour late, and I'm sitting here, pathetically waiting, hoping I don't get stood up. Not that she's the first person to stand me up. That award goes to Owen Mason Gentry. I should have known. I should have been prepared for it. That entire night with him seemed too good to be true, and the fact that I haven't heard from him after 3 solid weeks only proves that my decision to forego guys was a smart one. It still stings, though. It hurts like hell because when he walked out my door that Thursday night, I felt so hopeful. Not just about meeting him, but because it made me think Texas wouldn't be all that bad. I thought maybe for once things were going to go my way and karma was going to cut me some slack. As much as it hurt to realize he was full of shit, being stood up by Lydia hurts a little bit more than being stood up by Owen, because at least Owen didn't stand me up on my birthday. How could she forget? I won't cry. I won't do it. I've shed enough tears over that woman, and she's not causing any more. The waitress is back at the table, refilling my drink, my non-alcoholic drink. I'm drinking a pathetic soda, sitting alone in a restaurant, being stood up for the second time this month, and it's my 21st birthday. I'll take the bill, I say, defeated. The waitress gives me a look of pity as she lays the bill on the table. I pay it and leave. I hate that I still have to walk past his studio on my way home from work. Or in this case, on my way home from being stood up. Sometimes the light is on in his apartment upstairs, and I get the urge to set the place on fire. Not really. That's a little bit harsh. I wouldn't burn his beautiful art. Just him. When I reach his building, I stop and stare at it. Maybe it's worth walking an extra block or two from now on, just so I'll never have to pass it again. Before I reroute myself, maybe I should leave a confession. I've been wanting to leave one for 3 weeks, and tonight, everything has lined up perfectly for me to finally be pissed enough to do so. I walk to the front door of his building and stare at the slot while I reach inside my purse and pull out a pen. I don't have any paper, so I dig around until I find the receipt from the fantastic birthday dinner I just shared with myself. I flip it over and press the receipt to the window and begin my confession. I met this really great guy 3 weeks ago. He taught me how to dance, reminded me of what it feels like to flirt, walked me home, made me smile, and then, "You're an asshole, Owen." I press the button on the end of the pen to retract it. I put it back in my purse. Oddly enough, getting that out on paper actually made me feel a little better. I begin to fold the receipt, but flatten it back out and retrieve my pen in order to add another sentence. P.S. Your initials are so stupid. Much better. I slip the confession through the slot before I give myself enough time to think it through. I take a few steps away from the building and bid it farewell. I turn toward my apartment and my phone sounds off. I pull it out and open my text. Lydia, sorry, I got sidetracked and it's been such a crazy day. I hope you didn't wait long. Heading back to Pasadena in the morning, but you'll be at dinner Sunday, right? I read the text and all I can think is, bitch, 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 bitch. I'm so immature, but come on. She couldn't even tell me happy birthday? God, my heart hurts. I begin to put the phone back into my pocket when it sounds off again. Maybe she remembered it was my birthday. At least she'll feel a little guilty about it. Maybe I shouldn't have called her a bitch. Lydia, next time, remind me before I'm supposed to be there. You know I have my hands full. Bitch, 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 big, huge bitch. I clench my teeth and scream out of frustration. I can't win with her. I'll never win with her. I can't believe I'm about to do this, but I need a drink. An alcoholic drink. And lucky for me, I know just where to get one.
You, Lloyd.
Harrison is looking at my ID. I assume he just noticed that today is my birthday and I wasn't at all 21 when I walked in here with Owen the first time. Owen made me. Harrison shakes his head and hands me back my ID.
Owen does a lot of things Owen shouldn't do.
He wipes down the bar between us and tosses the rag aside, but I'm hoping he'll elaborate on that comment.
So what'll it be, Ms. Reed? Jack and Cook again?
I immediately shake my head. No thanks. Something a little less assaulting.
Margarita?
I nod. He turns around to make my first legally ordered alcoholic beverage. I hope he puts one of those tiny umbrellas in it.
Where's Owen?
He asks. I roll my eyes. Do I look like Owen's keeper? He's probably inside Hannah. Harrison spins around, wide-eyed. I shrug off my insult, and he laughs before returning his attention to my drink. When he's finished making it, he sets it on the bar in front of me. I begin to frown, but he reaches to his right, plucks an umbrella out of a jar, and places it in the drink.
See how you like this one.
I bring the margarita to my lips and lick the salt off first, then take a sip. My eyes light up, because this is so much better than the shit Owen ordered for me. I nod and motion for him to go ahead and make me another one.
Why don't you finish that one first?
He suggests. Another one, I say, wiping my mouth. It's my birthday, and I'm a responsible adult who wants two drinks. His shoulders rise with his intake of breath, and he shakes his head, but he does what I ask, which is a good thing, because as soon as he finishes making my second one, I'm ordering a third one. Because I can. Because it's my birthday, and I'm all alone, and Portland is way on top of the country, and I'm way down here, all the way at the bottom, and Owen Mason Gentry is a huge asshole. And Lydia is a bitch.
Chapter 8. Owen. There's someone here who belongs to you. It takes me a few seconds to adjust to the middle of the night phone call. I sit up in bed and rub my eyes. Harrison? You're asleep. He sounds shocked. It's not even 1 a.m. I swing my legs to the side of the bed and press my palm to my forehead. Been a rough week. Haven't slept much. I stand up and look for my jeans. Why are you calling? There's a pause, and I hear a clatter come from his end of the line. No, you can't touch that. Sit down. I pull the phone away from my ear to salvage my eardrum. Owen, you better get your ass over here. I close in 15 minutes and she doesn't take last call well. What are you talking about? Who are you talking about? And then it hits me. Auburn. Shit. I'll be right there. Harrison hangs up without saying goodbye, and I'm pulling a t-shirt over my head as I make my way downstairs. Why are you there, Auburn? And why are you there alone? I make it to the front door and kick a few of the confessions that have piled in front of it out of the way. I average about 10 most weekdays, but the downtown traffic triples the number on Saturdays. I usually throw them all in a pile until I'm ready to begin a new painting before I read them. But one of the confessions on the floor catches my eye. I notice it because it has my name on it, so I pick it up. I met this really great guy 3 weeks ago. He taught me how to dance, reminded me of what it feels like to flirt, walked me home, made me smile, and then, you're an asshole, Owen. P.S. Your initials are so stupid. The confessions are supposed to be anonymous, Auburn. This isn't anonymous. As much as I want to laugh, her confession also reminds me of how much I let her down and how I'm probably the last person she wants to see come rescue her from a bar. I walk across the street anyway and open the door, immediately searching for her. Harrison notices me approaching and nods his head toward the restroom. She's hiding from you. I grip the back of my neck and look in the direction of the restrooms. What's she doing here? Harrison lifts his shoulders in a shrug. Celebrating her birthday, I guess. You've got to be kidding me. Could I feel any more like shit? It's her birthday. I begin making my way toward the bathroom. Why didn't you call me sooner? She made me swear I wouldn't. I knock on the restroom door but get no response. I slowly push it open and immediately see her feet protruding from the last stall. Shit, Auburn. I rush to where she is but stop just as fast when I see she isn't passed out. In fact, she's wide awake. She looks a little too comfortable for someone sprawled out in a bar bathroom. She's resting her head against the wall of the stall, looking up at me. I'm not surprised by the anger in her eyes. I probably wouldn't want to speak to me right now either. In fact, I'm not even going to make her speak to me. I'll just take a seat right here on the floor with her. She watches me as I walk into the stall and take a seat directly in front of her. I pull my knees up and wrap my arms around them, and then lean my head back against the stall. She doesn't look away from me. She doesn't speak. She doesn't smile. She just inhales a slow breath and gives her head the slightest disappointed shake. You look like shit, Owen. I smile, because she doesn't sound as drunk as I thought she might be. But she's probably right. I haven't looked in a mirror in over 3 days. That happens when I get caught up in my work. I haven't shaved, so I more than likely have a good case of stubble going on. She doesn't look like shit, though, and I should probably say that out loud. She looks sad and a little bit drunk, but for a girl sprawled out on a bathroom floor, she looks pretty damn hot. I know I should apologize to her for what I did. I know that's the only thing that should be coming out of my mouth right now, but I'm scared if I apologize, then she'll start asking questions, and I don't want to have to tell her the truth. I would rather she be disappointed that I stood her up than know the truth about why I stood her up. Are you okay? She rolls her eyes and focuses on the ceiling, and I can see her attempt to blink back her tears. She brings her hands up to her face and rubs them up and down in an attempt to sober herself up, or maybe because she's frustrated that I'm here. Probably a little of both. I got stood up tonight. She continues to stare up at the ceiling. I'm not sure how to feel about this confession of hers, because my first reaction is jealousy, and I know that isn't fair. I just don't like the thought of her being so upset over someone who isn't me, when really it's none of my business. You get stood up by a guy so you spend the rest of the night drinking in a bar? That doesn't sound like you. Her chin immediately drops to her chest, and she looks up at me through her lashes. I didn't get stood up by a guy, Owen. That's very presumptuous of you. And for your information, I happen to like drinking. I just didn't like your drink. I shouldn't be focusing on that one word in her sentence, but... You got stood up by a girl? I have nothing against lesbians, but please don't be one. That's not how I envision this ending between us. Not by a girl either, she says. I got stood up by a bitch. A big, mean, selfish bitch. Her words make me smile, even though I don't mean for them to. There's nothing about her situation worth smiling over. But the way her nose crinkled up while she insulted whoever stood her up was really cute. I straighten my legs out, placing them on the outsides of her legs. She looks as defeated as I feel. What a pair we make. I want so badly to tell her the truth, but I also know that the truth won't make things any better between us than they are now. The truth makes less sense than the lie, and I don't even know which one I should go with anymore. The only thing I do know is that whether she's mad or happy or sad or excited, she has this calming energy that radiates from her. Every day of my life, it feels as if I'm fighting my way up an escalator that only goes down. And no matter how fast or how hard I run to try to reach the top, I stay in the same place, sprinting, getting nowhere. But when I'm with her, it doesn't feel like I'm on that escalator. It feels as if I'm on a moving walkway, and I'm effortlessly just carried along. Like I can finally relax and take a breath and not feel the constant pressure to sprint in order to prevent hitting rock bottom. Her presence calms me, relaxes me, makes me feel as though maybe things aren't as hard as they appear to be when she isn't around. So no matter how pathetic we may seem right now, sitting on the floor of the women's restroom, there isn't anywhere else I would rather be at this moment. "OMG," she says, leaning forward to pull at my hair. Her entire face contorts into a frown, and I can't understand how my hair is displeasing her so much right now.
"We need to fix this shit," she mutters.
She puts one hand on the wall and one on my shoulder, and she pushes herself up. When she's standing, she reaches for my hand.
"Come on, Owen. I'm gonna fix your shit."
I don't know that she's sober enough to fix anything, really. But that's okay, because I'm still on my moving walkway, so I'll effortlessly follow her anywhere she wants to go.
"Let's wash our hands, Owen. The floor is gross."
She walks to the sink and squirts soap on my palm. She glances at me in the mirror and looks down at my hand.
"Here's you some soap," she says, wiping the soap across my hand.
I can't tell with her. I don't know how much she's had to drink, but this interaction isn't what I was expecting tonight, especially after reading her confession. We wash our hands in silence. She pulls two paper towels out and hands one to me.
"Dry your hands, Owen."
I take the paper towels from her and do as she says. She's confident and in charge right now, and I think it's best to leave it that way. Until I figure out her level of sobriety, I don't want to do anything to trigger any type of reaction from her other than what I'm getting right now. I walk to the door and open it. She steps away from the sink, and I watch her stumble slightly, but she catches herself on the wall. She immediately looks down at her shoes and glares at them.
"Fucking heels," she mumbles.
Only she isn't wearing heels. She's wearing black flats, but she blames them anyway. We make our way back out into the bar, and Harrison has already closed up and shut off some of the lights. He raises a brow as we pass by him.
"Harrison?"
she says to him, pointing a finger in his direction.
"Auburn,"
he says flatly. She wags her finger, and I can tell Harrison wants to laugh, but he keeps it in check.
"You put those wonderful drinks on my tab, okay?"
He shakes his head.
"We close out all the tabs at the end of the night."
She places her hands on her hips and pouts.
"But I don't have any money. I lost my purse."
Harrison leans over and grabs a purse from behind the bar.
"You didn't lose it."
He shoves it across the bar and she stares at the purse like she's upset she didn't lose it.
"Well, shit. Now I have to pay you."
She steps forward and opens her purse.
"I'm only paying you for one drink because I don't even think you put alcohol in that second one."
Harrison looks at me and rolls his eyes, then pushes her money away.
"It's on the house. Happy birthday," he says. "And for the record, you had 3 drinks, all with alcohol."
She throws her purse over her shoulder.
"Thank you. You're the only person in the entire state of Texas to tell me happy birthday today."
Is it possible to hate myself more than I did 3 weeks ago? Yes, it absolutely is. She turns to me and tucks her chin in when she sees the look on my face.
"Why do you look so sad, Owen? We're going to fix your shit, remember?"
She takes a step toward me and grabs my hand.
"Bye, Harrison. I hate you for calling Owen."
Harrison smiles and gives me a nervous look, as if he's silently saying, "Good luck." I shrug and allow her to pull me behind her as we walk toward the exit.
"I got presents from Portland today," she says as we near the exit. "People love me in Portland, my mom and dad. My brother and sisters."
I push the door open and wait for her to walk outside first. It's the first day of September, happy birthday, and the night has an unseasonable chill to it for Texas. But how many people who claim to love me from Texas got me a present? Take a wild guess. I really don't want to guess. The answer is obvious, and I want to rectify the fact that no one from Texas got her a present today. I would say we should go get one right now, but not while she's drunk and angry. I watch her rub her hands up the bare skin of her arms and look up at the sky.
I hate your Texas weather, Owen. It's dumb. It's hot during the day and cold at night and unreliable the rest of the time.
I want to point out that the inclusion of both day and night leaves little room for a rest of the time. But I don't think now is a good time to get into specifics. She continues to pull me in a direction that isn't across the street to my studio, nor is it in the direction of her apartment. Where are we going? She drops my hand and slows down until we're walking next to each other. I want to put my arm around her so that she doesn't trip over her heels, but I also know that she's probably slowly sobering up, so I highly anticipate her coming to her senses soon. I doubt she wants me near her, much less with my arm around her.
We're almost there, she says, rummaging through her purse.
She stumbles a few times, and each time my hands fly up, preparing to break her fall, but somehow she always recovers. She pulls her hand out of her purse and holds it up, jiggling a set of keys so close to my face they touch my nose.
Keys, she says. Found him.
She smiles like she's proud of herself, so I smile with her. She swings her arm against my chest so that I stop walking. She points to the salon we're now standing in front of, and my hand immediately flies up to my hair in a protective response. She inserts the key in the lock, and sadly, the door opens with ease. She pushes it and motions for me to walk in first.
Lights are on the left by the door, she says.
I turn to my left, and she says, No, Owen, the other left. I keep my smile in check and reach to the right and flip the lights on. I watch her walk with purpose toward one of the stations. She drops her purse on the counter and then grips the back of the salon chair and spins it around to face me.
Sit.
This is so bad. What guy would allow an inebriated girl to come near him with a pair of scissors? A guy who stood up said inebriated girl and feels really guilty about it. I inhale a nervous breath as I take a seat. She spins me around until I'm facing the mirror. Her hand lingers over a selection of combs and scissors, as if she's a surgeon attempting to decide what tool she wants to slice me open with.
You really let yourself go, she says as she grabs a comb.
She stands in front of me and concentrates on my hair as she begins to comb through it.
Are you at least showering?
I shrug. Occasionally. She shakes her head, disappointed, as she reaches behind her for the scissors. When she faces me again, her expression is focused. As soon as the scissors begin to come at me, I panic and try to stand up.
Owen, stop, she says, pushing my shoulders back against the chair.
I try to gently brush her aside with my arm so I can stand, but she shoves me back in the chair again. The scissors are still in her left hand, and I know it's not intentional, but they're a little too close to my throat for comfort. Her hands are on my chest, and I can tell I just made her angry with my failed attempt at escaping.
You need a haircut, Owen, she says. It's okay. I won't charge you. I need the practice.
She brings one of her legs up and presses her knee onto my thigh, then brings the other leg up and does the same.
Be still.
Now that she physically has me locked to my chair, she lifts herself up and begins messing with my hair. She doesn't have to worry about my trying to escape now that she's in my lap. That won't happen. Her chest is directly in front of me, and even though her button-up shirt isn't at all revealing, the fact that I'm this close to such an intimate part of her has me glued to my seat. I gently lift my hands to her waist to keep her steady. When I touch her, she pauses what she's doing and looks down at me. Neither of us speaks, but I know she feels it. I'm too close to her chest not to notice her reaction. Her breath halts right along with mine. She looks away nervously as soon as we make eye contact, and she begins snipping at my hair. I can honestly say I've never had my hair cut quite like this before. They aren't as accommodating at the barber shop. I can feel the scissors sawing through my hair, and she huffs, "Your hair is really thick, Owen." She says it like it's my fault, and it's irritating her. "Aren't you supposed to wet it first?" Her hands pause in my hair as soon as I ask her that question. She relaxes and lowers herself until her thighs meet her calves. We're eye to eye now. My hands are still on her waist, and she's still on my lap, and I'm still thoroughly enjoying the position of this spontaneous haircut, but I can see from the sudden trembling of her bottom lip that I'm the only one enjoying it. Her arms fall limply to her sides, and she drops the scissors and the comb on the floor. I can see the tears forming, and I don't know what to do to stop them, since I'm not sure what started them. "I forgot to wet it," she says with a defeated pout. She begins to shake her head back and forth. "I'm the worst hairdresser in the whole world, Owen." And now she's crying. She brings her hands up to her face, attempting to cover her tears, or her embarrassment, or both. I lean forward and pull her hands away. "Auburn." She won't open her eyes to look at me. She keeps her head tucked down and she shakes it, refusing to answer me. "Auburn," I say again, this time raising my hands to her cheeks. I hold her face in my hands, and I'm mesmerized by how soft she feels. Like a combination of silk and satin and sin, pressing against my palms. God, I hate that I've already fucked this up so bad. I hate that I don't know how to fix it. I pull her toward me, and surprisingly, she lets me. Her arms are still at her sides, but her face is buried against my neck now. And why did I fuck this up, Auburn? I brush my hand over the back of her head and move my lips to her ear. I need her to forgive me, but I don't know if she can do that without an explanation. The only problem is, I'm the one who reads the confessions. I'm not used to writing them, and I'm certainly not used to speaking them. But I still need her to know that I wish things were different right now. I wish things would have been different 3 weeks ago. I hold on to her tightly so that she'll feel the sincerity in my words. "I'm sorry I didn't show up." She immediately stiffens in my arms, as if my apology sobered her up. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I watch closely as she slowly lifts herself away from me. I wait for a response or more of a reaction from her, but she's so guarded. I don't blame her. She doesn't owe me anything. She turns her head to the left in an effort to remove my hand from around the back of her head. I pull it away, and she grips the arms of the chair and pushes herself out of it. "Did you get my confession, Owen?" Her voice is firm, void of the tears that were consuming her a few moments ago. When she stands, she wipes her eyes with her fingers. "Yes." She nods, pressing her lips together. She glances at her purse and grabs both it and her keys. "That's good." She begins walking toward the door. I slowly stand, afraid to look in the mirror at the unfinished haircut she's just given me. Luckily, she switches the lights off before I have the chance to see it. "I'm going home," she says, holding the door open. "I don't feel so well."
Chapter 9. Auburn. I have four younger siblings ranging in age from 6 to 12 years old. My parents had me when they were still in high school and waited several years before having more kids. Neither of my parents went to college, and my father works for a manufacturing company, where he's been since he was 18. Because of this, we grew up on a budget. A very strict budget. A budget that didn't allow for air conditioners to be turned on at night. "That's what windows are for," my father used to say if anyone complained. I may have adopted his penny-pinching habit, but it hasn't really been an issue since moving in with Emery. She was on the verge of being evicted after her old roommate stuck her with half of the lease, so things like air conditioning aren't considered necessities. They're considered luxuries. This was fine when I lived back in Portland, but having lived in the bipolar weather of Texas for an entire month, I've had to adjust my sleeping habits. Instead of using a comforter, I sleep with layers of sheets. That way, if it gets too hot in the middle of the night, I can just push one or two of the sheets off the bed. With all that considered, why am I so cold right now? And why am I wrapped up in what feels like a down comforter? Every time I try to open my eyes and wake up to find answers to my own questions, I go right back to sleep because I've never been this comfortable. I feel like I'm a little cherub angel sleeping peacefully on a cloud. Wait, I shouldn't feel like an angel. Am I dead? I sit straight up in the bed and open my eyes. I'm too confused and scared to move, so I keep my head completely still and slowly move my eyes around the room. I see the kitchen, the bathroom door, the stairwell leading down to the studio. I'm in Owen's apartment. Why? I'm in Owen's big, comfortable bed. Why? I immediately turn and look down at the bed, but Owen isn't in it, thank God. The next thing I do is check my clothes. I'm still fully dressed. Thank God. Think. Why are you here, Auburn? Why does your head feel like someone used it as a trampoline all night? It comes back to me slowly. First, I remember being stood up. Bitch. I remember Harrison. I remember running to the bathroom after he betrayed me by calling Owen. I hate Harrison. I also remember being at the salon and... Oh, God. Really, Auburn? I was in his lap. In his lap, cutting his damn hair. I bring my hand to my forehead. That's it. I'm never drinking again. Alcohol makes people do stupid things, and I can't afford to be caught doing stupid things. The smart thing to do right now would be to get the hell out of here, which sucks because I really wish I could take this bed with me. I quietly slip out of it and head toward the restroom. I close the door behind me and immediately begin looking through drawers in order to hopefully find an unused toothbrush, but I come up empty-handed. Instead, I use my finger, some toothpaste, and an ungodly amount of amazing wintergreen mouthwash. Owen has great taste in bathroom products, that's for sure. Where is he, anyway? Once I'm finished in the restroom, I search for my shoes and find my Toms at the foot of his bed. I could have sworn I was in heels at some point last night. Yep, definitely never drinking again. I make my way to the stairs, hoping Owen isn't in the studio. He doesn't appear to be here, so maybe he left to avoid having to face me once I woke up. He obviously has his reasons for not showing up, so I doubt he's changed his mind about how he feels, which means this is probably the perfect opportunity to get the hell out of here and never come back.
You can't keep avoiding me, Owen. We need to talk about this before Monday.
I pause at the foot of the stairs and press my back against the wall. Shit. Owen is still here, and he's got company. Why? I just want to leave.
I know what my options are, Dad.
Dad? Great. The last thing I want right now is to do the walk of shame in front of his freaking father. This isn't good. I hear footsteps approaching, so I immediately begin to scale the stairs again, but the footsteps fade just as fast. I pause, but then the footsteps grow louder. I take two more steps, but the footsteps fade again. Whoever is walking, they're just pacing back and forth. After several back and forths, they come to a stop.
I need to prepare to shut down the studio,
Owen says.
It might be a few months before I can open it again, so I really just want to focus on that today.
Shut down the studio? I catch myself creeping back to the bottom of the stairs to hear more of the conversation. I'm being so uncharacteristically nosy, it makes me feel a bit like Emery right now.
This studio is the last thing you should be worried about right now,
his father says angrily. More pacing.
This studio is the only thing I'm worried about right now,
Owen says loudly. He sounds even angrier than his father. The pacing stops. His father sighs so heavily I could swear it echoes across the studio. There's a long pause before he speaks again.
You have options, Owen. I'm only trying to help you.
I shouldn't be listening to this. I'm not the type of person to invade someone's privacy, and I feel guilty for doing it. But for the life of me, I can't make myself walk back up the stairs.
You're trying to help me?
Owen says, laughing in disbelief. He's obviously not pleased with what his father is saying, or failing to say.
I want you to leave, Dad.
My heart skips an entire beat. I can feel it in my throat. My stomach is telling me to find an alternate escape route.
Owen, leave.
I squeeze my eyes shut. I don't know who to feel sorry for right now, Owen or his father. I can't tell what they're arguing about, and of course it's none of my business. But if I'm about to have to face Owen, I want to be prepared for whatever mood he's going to be in. Footsteps. I hear footsteps again, but some are coming and some are going, and I slowly open one eye and then the other. I try to smile at him because he looks so defeated standing at the bottom of the stairs looking up at me. He's wearing a blue baseball cap that he lifts up and flips around after running his hand over the top of his head. He squeezes the back of his neck and exhales. I've never seen him with a hat on before, but it looks good on him. It's hard to picture an artist wearing a baseball cap for some reason. But he's an artist, and he definitely makes it work. He doesn't look nearly as angry as he sounded a minute ago, but he definitely looks stressed. He doesn't seem like the same wide-eyed guy I met at the door 3 weeks ago. Sorry, I say, attempting to prepare for an excuse for why I'm standing here eavesdropping. I was about to leave, and then I heard you. He scales the first few steps, coming closer to me, and I stop speaking.
Why are you leaving?
His eyes are searching mine, and he looks disappointed. I'm confused by his reaction because I assumed he'd want me to leave. And honestly, I don't know why he seems confused that I would choose to leave after he failed to contact me for 3 weeks. He can't expect me to want to spend the day here with him. I shrug, not really knowing what to say in response. I woke up, and I want to leave. Owen reaches his hand around to my lower back and urges me up the stairs.
You aren't going anywhere, he says.
He tries to walk me up the stairs with him, but I push his hand off of me. He can more than likely see by the shock on my face that I'm not about to take orders from him. I open my mouth to speak, but he beats me to it.
Not until you fix my hair, he adds.
Oh. He pulls his cap off and runs his hand through his choppy hair.
I hope you're better at cutting hair when you're sober.
I cover my mouth with my hand to stifle my laughter. There are two huge chunks cut out of his hair, one of them front and center. I'm so sorry. I would say we're even now. Destroying hair as beautiful as his should definitely make up for the asshole move he made 3 weeks ago. Now if I could just get my hands on Lydia's hair, I'd feel a whole lot better. He slides his cap back on his head and begins walking up the stairs.
Mind if we go now?
Today is my day off, so I'm free to correct the damage I've done to his hair, but it kind of stinks that I have to go to the salon when I otherwise wouldn't have to. Emery marked the weekend off on the schedule for me since it was my birthday yesterday. She probably did this because most 21-year-olds do fun things on their birthday and want the weekend to celebrate. I've been living with her for a month now, so if she hasn't noticed already, she'll soon discover that I have no life and don't need special recovery days reserved on the calendar. I realize I've been paused on the steps and Owen is upstairs, so I make my way back up to his apartment. When I reach the top of the stairs, my feet stop moving again. He's in the process of changing his shirt. His back is to me, and he's pulling his paint-splattered t-shirt off over his head. I watch as the muscles in his shoulders move around and contract, and I wonder if he's ever painted a self-portrait. I would buy it. He catches me staring at him when he turns to reach for his other shirt. I do that thing where I quickly glance away and make it completely obvious that I was staring, since I'm now looking at nothing but a blank wall, and I know he's still looking at me, and oh my word, I just want to leave.
Is that okay?
He asks, pulling my attention back to him. Is what okay? I say quickly, relieved by the sound of our voices, which is now eliminating the awkwardness I was about to dream.